Alrighty, Shabbat Shalom, and Shabbat Shalom to all those with us today, and Chag Sameach. It is Shavuot weekend, and today I will be giving a message on the importance of the marriage covenant for the end time. And I didn't realize the second reason why Yahweh sent us to Mount Sinai was to restore his covenant there, and here it is, Shavuot weekend. And many people think that the Ten Commandments were given on Shavuot, which possibly could be true. And also, we know that that was a marriage covenant that Yahweh did with his people. So, covenants are binding sacred agreements between two parties. So today the world thinks in terms of religion. Religion is not in your scriptures, but covenants are in your scriptures. So the blood covenant is the most sacred of all covenants. So we have different covenants, right? We have the first covenant, the second or the new covenant. We have the Sabbath covenant, the Levitical covenant, you know, all different kinds of covenants that are in scripture. But the blood covenant, not every covenant is a blood covenant. The blood covenant is the most sacred of all covenants, and only death can break a blood covenant. So the Hebrew word for covenant is berith, right? And the word picture, what do I mean by word picture? Originally, there was no alphabet, and then before there was a letter alphabet, there was hieroglyphic alphabet. And the words actually, the pictures actually, made the words, like the word Abba, father, is Aleph Bet, and Aleph is an ox, Bet is a house, so the father is the strength of the family. So the word picture for Berith, for covenant, is sealing of the work of the family of the Most High. Very interesting. The sealing of the work of the family of the Most High. So, we're living in really, really dangerous times here. And just to go over quickly just the blood covenant, there's 9 steps to the ancient blood covenant. And the 3rd step is actually cutting the covenant. The 4th step is raising the right arm and mixing the blood. The 5th step is exchanging names. The 6th step is making a scar. The 7th step is giving terms of the covenant. The 8th step is eating a memorial meal, and the 9th step is planning a memorial. So step 1 was taking off the coat or robe. Step 2 is take off the belt. And this is all the steps of the ancient blood covenant. I have that online, this whole sermon on this that you can go and look later. But just showing about the blood covenant, you know, it is literally blood has to be shed for the blood covenant, and the marriage covenant is a blood covenant, as we'll see here. So in 2 Timothy 2, or 3 rather, 2 Timothy 3, talks about, but know this, in the last days disastrous times will be upon us. And while he didn't have to tell us that, it couldn't get any worse, I don't think, than it is now. Talks about men being lovers of themselves, lovers of money, braggarts, arrogant, blasphemous, disobedient to parents, ungrateful, wicked, without natural feeling, addicted to lust, slanderers, without self-control, savage, haters of good, and then traitors, hasty boasters, lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of Elohim. So, truce breakers are traitors in the end time, that people basically simply don't care about the words they agree to. Contracts mean nothing anymore, words mean nothing anymore. But in ancient times, when somebody made a covenant, it was impossible to break that covenant. So I want to show you today the importance of the marriage covenant for the end time we're living in, because as we know, the marriage covenant with Yeshua is a covenant forever. So if we don't uphold the marriage covenant in this physical life, how are we ever going to hold it with him forever? So life is only a test to see how faithful we will be as the bride of Messiah for eternity. Yahweh is testing us. It's that simple. So let's go to Deuteronomy 23, and let's see how important our words are and with vows, and the marriage covenant is a vow, just like baptism is a vow. Deuteronomy 23 in verse 21 says, "When you shall vow a vow to Yahweh your Elohim, you shall not delay to perform it, for Yahweh your Elohim will certainly require it of you, and it shall be sin to you. Verse 23, that which has gone out of your lips you shall keep and shall do it according as you have vowed as a freewill offering to Yahweh Elohim. Do even that which has spoken with your mouth. So we see it all the time today. People make rash vows about all kinds of things. Sometimes about donating something to Yahweh or doing something into your life. And then they switch right away and they don't do it. And Yahweh says, when you make a vow, whatever comes out of your mouth, you must perform it. It's that simple. So whatever comes out of our lips is a vow. And that's why Yeshua said, let your yes be yes and your no be no. Because whatever is out of your mouth, you need to perform. Numbers 30 and verse 1 says, and Moses spoke to the heads of the tribes of the sons of Israel, saying, this is the thing which Yahweh has commanded. When a man vows a vow to Yahweh or has sworn an oath to bind his soul with a bond, he shall not break his word. He shall do all that has gone out of his mouth. So again, this is, basically in ancient times, your word was your bond. What you said, especially in covenants, it was just, it couldn't be broken. And again, we're living in a world today where people don't take anything serious, you know. Even baptism. I remember almost 40 years ago when I came into the truth, you know, we had 1,000 people in our local area. And if one person didn't come to Passover, if one person fell away, it was traumatic. It was like, wow, what happened to brother so-and-so? Today, about 50% of people that get baptized don't even last a year. I mean, it's that bad. It's the kind of world we're living in because people simply don't keep their word. People simply cannot fulfill their word. We're living in those times where disastrous times are upon us because people are selfish and people don't care and people don't care about the commitments they make and they don't want to do it. Matthew 12 and verse 34. It says, generation of vipers, how can you, being evil, speak good things? For out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks, right? So that's the thing. What comes out, the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. The good man out of the good treasure of his heart puts forth good things, and the evil man out of the evil treasure puts forth evil things. But I say to you that every vain word, whatever man may speak, they shall give an account of it in judgment day. For by your words you'll be justified, and by your words you'll be condemned. So we need to be thinking when we're saying things. We need to be thinking of the words coming out of our mouth, and we have to make sure that everything coming out of our mouth that we're keeping. We will be accountable for every word we say and break. Hebrews 9 and verse 15, showing you the new covenant is a blood covenant. And for this reason, he, Yeshua, became the mediator of the new covenant, that he might by his death be redemption to them who had transgressed the first covenant, so that they who are called to the eternal inheritance might receive the promise. For where there is a testament, it shows the death of him who made it, right? Like last will and testament. For a covenant is affirmed over those dead, since it never has force when he who has made it is living. For this reason, not even the first covenant was confirmed without blood. And we know that Moses confirmed the covenant in Exodus 24 with the blood of the animal at that time, with the altar that we just saw when we were at Mount Sinai just a little over a week ago. Deuteronomy 22 and verse 13. So let me show you that the marriage covenant is a blood covenant. Deuteronomy 22 and verse 13. Says, if a man takes a wife and goes into her and hates her, then makes against her shameful charges and brings up an evil name on her and says, I took this woman, and when I came near her, I did not find in her the tokens of virginity, then the girl's father and her mother shall take and bring the girl's token of virginity to the elders of the city gate. And our footnote here says, this was the stained bloody sheet from the wedding night proving her virginity. So that's what would happen when a girl would get married, and they have relations on the wedding night, the mother would keep the sheet, you know, because showing that the girl was a virgin and proving that by the blood on the sheet that she was a virgin at that time. And behold, he has laid shameful charges, saying, I have not found in your daughter the tokens of virginity, and yet see these tokens of my daughter's virginity, the bloody sheet. And they shall spread the garment before the elders of the city, and the elders of that city shall take that man and punish him. So, but if the thing is true, verse 20, and tokens of virginity have not been found by the girl, then they shall bring out the girl to the door of her father's house, and the men of the city will stone her with stones, and she shall die, for she has done folly in Israel to commit fornication in her father's house, and you shall put away the evil from among you. So very clearly, how serious is the marriage covenant? Extremely serious, that if fornication or adultery was involved, literally it is the death penalty. Today you have a divorce rate of close to 60%, and more than half the people, at least in the USA, are not even marrying anymore. So what does that tell you? If the divorce rate is still close to 60%, and more than 50% don't even marry, they just cohabitate together, the marriage covenant is in shambles, and it's because of the world we live in, because of the things I talked about in 2 Timothy. Mark 10, let's go there, to clearly show that once the two become one, it is impossible, except for death, to change that. And people come up with all different kinds of reasons to violate the marriage covenant, but we'll see here that's not possible. And rising up from there, he came into the borders of Judea by the other side of the Jordan. And again, crowds came together to him, and he again taught them as they were accustomed. And coming near, the Pharisees asked him, is it lawful for a man to put away a wife, tempting him? So there were two schools of thought in the days of Yeshua. The one school of thought was Hillel, that believed you can only put away your wife in the case of adultery. If adultery is involved, you can put your wife away. Shammai, he believed you could basically put your wife away for burning the toast. You know, anything was reason for divorce. And they're asking him, basically, who is right? Hillel or Shammai? And as Yeshua always does, he goes above it and shows neither are right. But answering, he said to them, what did Moses command you? And they said, Moses allowed to write a bill of divorce and put her away. And answering, Yeshua said to them, with respect to your hard-heartedness, he wrote this command to you. But from the beginning of creation, Yahweh made them male and female. Because of this, a man will leave his father and mother and will be joined to his wife, and the two shall be one flesh, so they are no longer two, but one flesh. Therefore, what Yahweh has yoked together, man cannot put apart, just like two oxen that are yoked together, right? And again in the house, his disciples asked him about the same, and he said to him, whoever divorces his wife, right, and marries another, commits adultery against her, very clearly. Whoever divorces his wife and marries another, no exception clause, right? And if a woman divorces her husband and marries another, she commits adultery. Very clear. If a woman divorces her husband and marries another, she commits adultery. And in the book of Matthew, it says, even in the case of adultery, you cannot do it. Even if there's adultery. So there is no exception clause in that case. Once the two are one, only death can separate them. There is no such thing as divorce to Yahweh, as we will see here. Genesis 2, this is what Yeshua was going by, verse 18, and then I'll drop down to verse 21. And Yahweh Elohim said, it is not good the man being alone, I will make a helper suited to him. Verse 21, and Yahweh caused a deep sleep to fall on the man, and he slept, and he took one of his ribs and closed up the flesh underneath. And Yahweh Elohim formed the rib, which he had taken from the man, into a woman, and brought her to the man. And the man said, this is last is bone from my bones and flesh from my flesh, for this shall be called woman, because out of man this has been taken. Therefore a man will leave his father and mother and will cleave to his wife, and they shall become one, ikad, unified flesh. And they were both naked, the man and his wife, and they were not ashamed. So this is what Yeshua was going back to, the original marriage covenant, a supernatural union. They're no longer two, but one. What Yahweh has joined, man can't separate. It's pretty simple. There's no other way you could take those scriptures. And if you take all the scriptures in the first covenant and the new covenant, it's exactly what they will say. There is nowhere there for divorce. So what we see from the original marriage covenant is marriage is monogamous, right? It's between one man and one woman, heterosexual, right? A man and a woman, and a complete union of the two people. So that is the way that Yahweh had ordained the marriage covenant. And that's what he wanted. Ephesians 5, because why is this so important, as we're going to see here? It's so important because there, before 6,000 years ago, there was no man and woman. There was no these things. Yahweh just created the sexes. He created the institution of marriage to show the relationship that will be for him and his bride for eternity, the first fruits, the body of Messiah, right? So Ephesians 5 shows this. This is the miracle, the mystery of the new covenant is the marriage covenant. Ephesians 5 and verse 22 says, "Wives, submit yourself to your own husbands as to our master." So the wife is supposed to submit to the husband as she would to Yeshua, because ultimately all of us will be married to Yeshua. "Because a husband is head of the wife, as also Messiah is head of the congregation, he is savior of the body. But even as the congregation is subject to Messiah, so also the wives to their own husbands in everything. Husbands, love your wife, even as Messiah also loved the congregation and gave himself up on its behalf, that he might sanctify it, cleansing it by the washing of water and by the word, that he might present it to himself as the glorious congregation, not having stain nor wrinkle for any such thing, but that it would be kadosh and without blemish." And that's what we see in Revelation, right? 19:17-19. What does it say? That the bride has made herself ready. The bride has made herself ready and has gotten all the stains and wrinkles. Meaningly, through the challenges that we go through, we have the bride has grown to the point where she's got every stain and wrinkle out of the wedding garment. And she has a white garment on. "So he might present it to himself as the glorious congregation, not having stain or wrinkle or any such things, but that it be kadosh and without blemish. So husbands ought to love their wives as their own bodies. He loving his wife loves himself. For then no one hated his own flesh, but nourishes and cherishes it, even also as our master does to the congregation." Right? Read Song of Solomon. What an amazing book showing Yeshua's love to his congregation. "For we are members of his body and of his flesh and bones." Right? Corinthians 12. We are literally members of him. So this is really a miracle, and I've been teaching this at the Bible school that I think brethren haven't really embraced what Yeshua really did on our behalf, right? He's this eternal being, this eternal spirit being, right? So he's not made up of matter, he's made up of spirit, so he's invisible, he can go at the speed of thought, he can be in multiple places at one time, he's not bound by space or time or matter, and yet he put that to the side. He put his divinity to the side, and he came down in a human body for 32 to 33 years. As a human being, as a man, no different than any man that's on the earth, right? He had no special powers, except everything he did and the miracles he did was through his faith in Yahweh. And he did this so that he could be the first fruit, that he could be the firstborn of the dead, so he could go before us in all things. So literally, he is the head, and we, as the first fruits, are his body. We are ikad, we are one, we are united with him. "For we are members of his body and his flesh and of his bones." Turn back to chapter 1 there in verse 23 of Ephesians. It says, "Which is his body, the fullness of the one, filling all things and everything," right? So do you grasp that? You grasp that all of us together, you know, literally make up the body of Messiah. Verse 31, "For this, a man shall leave his father and mother and shall be joined to his wife, and the two will be ikad, one flesh," just like it said in Genesis, right? This is why you can't break the marriage covenant. "This is a great mystery, but I speak as to Messiah and his congregation." So if that covenant could be broken, and Yahweh allows divorce, we're in trouble, because none of us are faithful. And that means that Yeshua could get rid of all of us and do something different. But because the marriage covenant is so sacred and only death can break it, Yeshua abides by that the same as anybody else would. And that's why we are still his body today. And this is the great mystery. But I speak as to Messiah and his congregation. Nevertheless, let every one of you so love his wife as himself, and the wife that she give reverence to the husband. So this is the miracle. This is why the importance of the marriage covenant for the end time. And it was only recently, when we were at Mount Sinai, that I was able to, was blessed to perform a marriage ceremony for two brethren that were there with us from Thailand. And during that ceremony, it was when Yahweh was showing me the restoration of the marriage covenant there at Mount Sinai. The first time we went, we were restoring his name. And the second time, we were restoring his covenant. So I would like to just show you a short video of that part of that ceremony that you can kind of get a flavor of the marriage covenant at Mount Sinai. So you see there, right in the ceremony, right? Both partners make the vow, till death do them part, right? They are making covenant. And the covenant they're making is not just with each other, it's with Yahweh. It's the two partners in Yahweh that make the covenant together, and it symbolizes the marriage covenant to Yeshua. So this is why it's so sacred. You know, now granted, in the world, for people who don't understand this, Yahweh does have mercy. You know, it doesn't mean that anyone in the world that was ever divorced will never be in the kingdom. But it certainly means as believers, we have to abide by that marriage covenant. And within Yeshua's congregation, there is no such thing as divorce. Granted, there's times where there's, you know, abusive husband or something that may even be beating the wife or whatever. And a person in those situations does not have to stay there and be beaten so they can separate. But it is always with the hope of reconciliation. The same way that Yahweh is reconciling Israel to him today. Look, after all these years, 700 and something years that Israel has been in captivity, and Yahweh is still redeeming Israel after all this and everything that Israel has done. So Yahweh is Elohim of redemption, right? He's Elohim of restoration. And that's what the marriage covenant is about. And that's why in the new covenant, there is no such thing as divorce. It is the two people are married until death do them part, because in the resurrection, like it says, there will not be marriage. It's just a symbolic of what marriage symbolizes with Yeshua and his congregation. Let's go to Matthew 14 and show some scriptures that show this. And this is a very interesting scripture, because it was with John the Baptist, with Herod, right? And Matthew 14 and verse 3 says, "For seizing John, Herod bound him and put him into prison because of Herodias, the wife of his brother Philip. For John said to him, 'It is not lawful for she be a wife for you,'" right? And what's interesting about this is Josephus actually mentions this. Josephus, the famous historian at this time. And he actually says this was after they were already divorced. But because divorce is not recognized by Yahweh, what did John say to Herod? It is not lawful for him to have her as a wife, because she was already married to the brother, right? There is no such thing as divorce. So even after supposedly they divorced, John still said it was not legal for him to be with her. Romans 7, verse 1 through 3. It says, "Do you not know, brethren, for I speak to them who know the Torah, that the Torah has authority over a person for as long as they shall live," right? So once the person dies, that's what why it says, "Till death do us part." "Just as the married woman is bound by the Torah to the living husband, but if the husband dies, she is set free from the law of her husband. So then, if the husband is living, she will be called an adulteress if she should be married to another man. But if the husband dies, she is free from the law, so as for her not to be an adulteress by becoming another man's wife." So very clearly, "Till death do them part." That's what it says in the first covenant. It's what it says in the new covenant. It's what it says all throughout the Bible. Yahweh does not recognize divorce. Let's go to Corinthians 7, because sometimes people go to Corinthians 7 saying somehow Corinthians 7 condones divorce and remarriage, and it does not. It does not. 1 Corinthians 7 says, now concerning the things which you wrote me, so I guess they were asking him questions about the very topic we're talking about today, and this is Paul's answers. It is proper for a man not to have intimacy with his wife at times. Nevertheless, because of the danger of immorality, let every man hold to his own wife, and let every woman hold to her own husband. Let the husband give to his wife the love that he owes her, and likewise the wife also to the husband. The wife does not have authority of her own body, but the husband, and likewise also the husband does not have authority over his own body, but the wife. Do not deprive one another, talking about in sexual relations, unless by agreement for a time, especially when you devote yourself to fasting and prayer, and then come together again that Satan may not tempt you because of your physical passion. But I say this to weak persons, for it is not part of the Torah. Right? So he's given just his advice there. For I desire all men to be as myself in purity, but each one has his own gift from Elohim, one this way and one that way. But I say to the unmarried men and to the widows, it is good for them if they also remain as I. But if they do not have self-control, let them marry. It is better to marry than to burn with passion. But I command the ones being married, not I but our master, let not the wife be separated from her husband. But if indeed she is separated, remain unmarried, or be reconciled to the husband, and a husband not to desert his wife. So here, very clearly, it shows again that a married person, yes, there's times there could be separation, but no divorce. And now he says, but to the rest I say, not our master. If any brother has an unbelieving wife, and she consents to live with him, let him not leave her. And a woman who has an unbelieving husband and he consents to live with her, let her not leave him. For the unbelieving husband has been sanctified by the wife, and the unbelieving wife has been sanctified by the husband. Else then your children are impure, but in such cases they are pure. But if the unbelieving one separates, let them be separated, not divorced, just separate. The brother or sister is not in bondage in such matters, but Elohim has called us in peace, right? And if we look at our note, it says, the bondage is that Yeshua stated that if a man would leave his spouse, he is causing her to commit adultery. And even if he stayed unmarried, he would be accountable for the wife's adultery because he left her, Matthew 5:32. Here, Paul is stating in the case of an unconverted mate, if they leave due to the converted mate's faith, the converted mate would have no accountability to the departed mate's adultery if they remarried. Nowhere does it state the believing mate can remarry while their unconverted mate is still living. So that's very clear. So that's all Paul is saying, that if you're married to an unconverted mate and they just leave, there's nothing you can do about it. But in that case, you're not accountable for their adultery if they remarry. But never says the believer can remarry. For what do you know, wife, whether you will save the husband? Or what do you know, husband, whether you will save the wife? Only as Yahweh has divided to each, each as the master is called, so let him walk. So I command in the congregations, if a man was circumcised when he was called, let him not adhere to the party of the uncircumcision. If he was uncircumcised when he was called, let him not be circumcised. Circumcision is nothing and uncircumcision is nothing, but the keeping of the commandments of Yahweh is everything. Let each one remain in the station of life in which he was called, right? So if a person comes into the faith and they're already remarried. Nothing says that they have to leave the spouse and go back to original one. Actually, you can't do that. It's against Torah. But the same way, if somebody is divorced and they come into the congregation, they can't remarry. Let everyone stay in the state in which he was called. Were you called as a slave? It does not matter. But if you are not able to be free, rather use it. But if you are able to be free, rather use it. For the one called while a slave in our master is a free man of our master, and likewise the one called while a free man is a slave of our master. You were redeemed with a price, do not become slaves of men. My brethren, let every man in whatever station of life he was called remain therein serving Elohim. But about virgins, so he went into, right, married people, he went into people that had unconverted spouses, now he's talking about virgins, those never married. I have no command from Elohim, but I give judgment as having received favor by Elohim to be faithful. Then I think this to be good because of the present necessity, Paul thinking the end was right there, that it is good for a man to remain this way. Have you been engaged to a wife? Do not seek to be released. Have you been released from a woman or a betrothal? Do not seek a wife. This is just his opinion there, right? But if you also marry, you do not sin. And if the virgin marries, she does not sin. But such will have trouble in the flesh, but I am sparing you. So in verse 25 and 26, you got to remember in the ancient marriage covenant, which was a blood covenant, at betrothal, it's as if the covenant was already made. So even a betrothal, the only thing that can break a betrothal is unfaithfulness at that time. So he's saying if a betrothal was broken and they never married, then that person can remarry or marry because they were never married. And the man or the woman. So he's also saying to the virgins, if she marries, the virgin doesn't sin. But I say this, brethren, that the time has been cut short. Let the ones having wives be as though they have none, and those weeping is not weeping, and those rejoicing is not rejoicing, and those buying as they did not possess anything. And those who make use of this world is not abusing it, for the mode of this world is passing away. But I desire you to be without care. The unmarried one cares for the things of the master, how to please his master. But the one marrying cares for the things of the world, how to please the wife. So he's just saying the single person can dedicate 100% of his life to Yahweh, whereas the married person, man or female, they have to care for their family and they can't do the same. But the one marrying cares for the things of the world, how to please the wife. The wife and the virgin are different. The unmarried one cares for the welfare of her master, that she be pure in both body and spirit, but the married one cares for the things of the world, how to please the husband. And I say this for your benefit, not that I put a snare or put a yoke on you, but I exhort you to be perfect before the master and faithful without distraction. So he's just giving his opinion that at this time, him thinking that there's only a few years before Yeshua's return, and the way that things are with persecution, that it was better for people that were not married to stay that way, but he's not restricting them. But if a man thinks he is ashamed by the behavior of his virgin daughter, if she is beyond her prime, and he has not given her a marriage, and that he should give her, let him do what he desires. He does not sin, let her marry. But he who stands firm in heart, not having necessity, but has authority as to his own will, and has judged this in his heart to keep his virgin daughter single, he does well. So that he that gives his virgin daughter in marriage does well, and he that does not give the virgin daughter in marriage does even better. And then he goes in verse, a wife is bound by the Torah for as long as a time as her husband lives. But if her husband dies, she is free to be married to whomever she desires, only in the master. You can't marry someone outside the faith. But she is happy if she remains so, according to my judgment, and I think I also have the spirit of Elohim. So very clearly here, right? And he ends up in verse 39, the wife is bound by the Torah as long as the husband lives. He is never, ever condoning in anything in this chapter divorce and remarriage. He never even talks about divorce, to be honest. He's talking about married people. He's talking about people with unconverted spouse. He's talking about virgins. He's talking about people that were engaged and had the engagement broken off. But he never talks about divorce because there is no divorce. A matter of fact, in the first century, divorce was not something that was looked upon by believers as something that was, in any case, could be done. It's that simple. That's what history tells us, and that's the importance of the marriage covenant, and this is what Yahweh is restoring today. It's part of the restoration of going to Mount Sinai. I've been there three times now. Yahweh willing, I'll be going there a fourth time this fall, and Yahweh is restoring things. He's restoring his name, he's restoring the covenant, and we'll see what else he's going to be restoring as the days come ahead. Just to show you how important vows were, let's also go to Joshua, the 9th chapter, right? When they come into the land and the Gibeonites deceive them, right? And let's read it. Joshua 9 and verse 3. It says, and the ones living in Gibeon heard what Joshua had done to Jericho and to Ai. And they acted slyly, and they went up and acted like envoys and took old sacks for their donkeys and old wineskins, even torn and bound up, and old and patched sandals on their feet and old garments on them. And all their provisions of bread was dry, it was crumbs. And they went to Yehoshua to the camp at Gilgal, and they said to him and to the men of Israel, we have come from a distant land and now cut a covenant with us. So they lied to him. They're their neighbors, they're afraid. So they tell them they came from far away. They make it look like their clothes is old and their food is old because they want to make a covenant so that Joshua doesn't kill them. And the men of Israel said to the Hivites, Perhaps you are living in our midst, and how shall we cut a covenant with you? And they said to Yehoshua, we are your servants. And Yehoshua said to him, who are you, and from where do you come? And they said to him, your servants have come from a very distant land. They're lying, right? Because of the name of Yahweh, your Elohim, for we have heard of his fame in all that he has done in Egypt. Drop down to verse 13. And these are the wineskins which we filled, and behold, they are torn. And these garments of ours and our sandals have become old because of the exceedingly greatness of the way. Again, a lie. And the men took of their provision and did not ask at the mouth of Yahweh. Important mistake they made. And Yehoshua made peace with them and cut a covenant with them to keep them alive. And the leaders of the congregation swore to them. And at the end of 3 days, after they had cut a covenant with them, and it happened that they heard that they were their neighbors and they were living in their midst. Verse 18, and the sons of Israel did not strike them, for the leaders of the congregation swore to them by Yahweh, the Elohim of Israel. And all the congregation murmured against the leaders. And the leaders said to all the congregation, we have sworn to them by Yahweh, the Elohim of Israel, and now we cannot touch them. We shall do this to them. We shall keep them alive, and wrath shall not be on us because of the oath which we have sworn to them. So, again, you're living in a time now where oaths were... People go on court. They go in a court, and they swear on a Bible in court, and they lie through their teeth. And sometimes the person who's actually given testimony is the one that did something wrong, and he's lying about somebody else. People were living in a time where people simply are liars and truth breakers. It's that simple. But here we see from the Bible, it's not like that. When you make a vow, when you make an oath, you must keep your word, particularly to Yahweh. And the marriage covenant is between a husband, a wife, and Yahweh. And that covenant is until one of the partners dies. There is no exception clause in there. The same as the baptism covenant, which is also a marriage covenant to a degree, because it's the marriage covenant with Yeshua. It's the betrothal time when that is happening. So very, very clearly we see here from the book of Yehoshua that they had to keep the vows, even though they were tricked, because it was a vow made to Yahweh. And verse 14, like I said, they did not ask at the mouth of Yahweh. And we have to make sure, I tell young people this all the time, you can't let your emotions guide you when you're talking about marriage. You have to make sure that, because it's going to be for the rest of your life, that it's the right thing, that you really thought about it. It shouldn't be made in haste. And you have to make sure you're asking Yahweh to pick your mate, not doing it yourself. Acts 5, we see another thing here with vows. Acts 5. But a certain man named Cananiah and his wife Sapphira sold a property and kept back from the price. His wife also aware of it, and bringing a certain part, he put it at the feet of the apostles. But Peter said, Cananiah, why did Satan fill your heart to lie to the Ruach HaKodesh and to secretly keep back from the price of the land? Was it not yours before it was sold? And after it was sold again, were you not in control of its proceeds? Why have you placed in your heart to do this spectacle? You have not lied in the presence of men, but in the presence of Elohim. And hearing these words, Cananiah fell down and died, and great fear came on all those who heard. So, right? So he didn't have to give all of it. It was in his hand. The price was in his hand. He had to give the tithe on the increase. That was it. But because other people were giving the whole amount, he didn't want to be shamed not to give the whole amount, and he lied. He lied, he didn't keep his vow, and he died for it. He lost his life for that. So vows are important. Vows are extremely important to Yahweh, as we saw in the beginning here. And when we make a vow, we have to keep it. And there's, except for baptism, there's no more important vow in a person's life than the marriage vow. Malachi 2 and verse 14. Malachi 2 and verse 14 says, yet you say, on what cause? Because Yahweh has been witness between you and the wife of your youth, against whom you have dealt treacherously, and she is your companion and your covenant wife. And has he not made you Ikad? Yet the remainder of the spirit is in him. And what of the one? He is seeking a seed of Elohim. Then guard your spirit and do not deal treacherously with the wife of your youth. Yahweh, the Elohim of Israel, says he hates divorce. And to cover with violence on his garment, says Yahweh of hosts, then guard your spirit and do not act treacherously. So Yahweh hates divorce. There's not that, the word hate in Yahweh is not in the Bible too many times. He also hates brethren that gossip and malign other brethren, right? And bring a false name. But there's not too many other things you could find that Yahweh hates in there. But this is one of those ones that he hates. Right? In Malachi 3:6, I am Yahweh, do not change because this, the sons of Jacob are not destroyed, right? So Yahweh is the same yesterday, today, and forever. Yahweh made the marriage covenant from creation. And just think, where would the world be today without that? And we're seeing it because the marriage covenant is crumbling in an evil world of Satan. But the world cannot last even one generation without the marriage covenant. So just think about this. For 6,000 years from Adam and Eve until today, in every generation, in every country in the world, communists, atheists, you know, false religion, Buddhism, Hinduism, paganism, right? Catholicism, no matter what people believe, in every single country, in every single generation for the last 6,000 years, there's only one thing, one ceremony that has remained in all of it, and that's the marriage covenant. Nothing else has. There's nothing else that has remained in every single generation for the last 6,000 years except the marriage covenant. So like I said, whether you go to China, whether you go to Antarctica, whether you go to Norway, you know, whether you go to Australia, it doesn't matter where you go, people are still getting married before witnesses and making vows to each other, and those vows are till death do you part, and that's the marriage covenant. And it's not just with the two people, it's also with Yahweh, although in the world they don't understand this. But in the congregation we do, and that's why, shame on any congregation that claims to be believers that it's allowing this. I've seen congregations in the time we're living in now that even sometimes they may know the name of Yahweh or they may be Sabbath keepers, and they even allow ministers that are divorced to be ordained. I don't know how they get that, because it's very clearly the elder must be the husband of one wife, and it's not one wife at a time. You know, it's not like the Muslim religion where they can marry four wives and then get rid of one and bring another one in and get rid of one and bring another one in and keep doing that. It's one wife, period, until death do you part. And anybody that has two living spouses is not eligible for marriage. It's that not eligible for ordination. I'm sorry, not marriage. Well, not eligible for marriage either. Anybody that has more than one living spouse is not eligible to remarry or to be ordained. It's that simple. Okay. 2 Timothy 2:13. It says, if we believe not in him, that one remains faithful, he is not able to deny himself. So this is the point. The marriage covenant, like he says, it's about him and his bride. And this is the covenant that we make with Yahweh. It's the covenant that we make with Yeshua. And it's the covenant that will stand forever. So we need to understand that, we need to abide by it, and we need to honor that in our lives. Abraham never walked through the pieces. What am I talking about? The blood covenant, right? The third part of the blood covenant is cutting the covenant and walking through the pieces. So the two covenant partners go back to back, they do a figure eight through the pieces, and they come face to face, and then they make their covenant agreement. In Genesis 15, Abraham never walked through those pieces because he knew he couldn't make covenant with Yahweh and Yeshua. He let Yeshua walk through the pieces, and he entered the covenant through Yeshua the same way we do. And that's why Abraham is part of the everlasting covenant, because he realized the way Israel didn't do that. Joshua told Israel, Yehoshua, don't enter this covenant. You're going to break it. And then, you know, in Yehoshua 24. And then Yahweh's, you know, going to punish you. And they said, no. We saw all the blessings. We want this. And they entered it when they couldn't keep it. And they broke it. And they violated it. And severed the covenant from Yahweh because of that. But Abraham did not walk through the pieces. He let Yeshua and Yahweh walk through. And he entered the everlasting covenant through Yeshua. Abraham never walked through the pieces. Hebrews 6, Yahweh made covenant with you. Yeshua, we enter by his blood. Don't mock the spirit of grace by desecrating the most solemn covenant next to our baptism. Right? So the marriage covenant, like I said, is a blood covenant. And the true marriage covenant that's in heaven, we enter that covenant through the blood of Yeshua. And that's the covenant that Yeshua as the bridegroom and collectively all of us as the bride will be in forever. Let's go to Isaiah 24. Isaiah 24. Because in the end time, Yahweh is coming and his wrath is coming on the world because people are covenant breakers. And it is a serious thing. And like I said, in the world we live in today, people don't keep their word for the smallest thing to the biggest thing. and they don't understand the importance of what your word means, you know, that your word is your bond. But we need to think about that. And if we want to have any credibility as ambassadors of Yahweh, we better make sure we're keeping our word from the smallest thing to the greatest thing. Isaiah 24 says, "Lo, Yahweh empties the earth and makes it bare and distorts his face and scatters those living in it." The day of Yahweh. The day of Yahweh is coming. And why is that? "The earth shall completely be emptied and utterly stripped, for Yahweh has spoken this word. The earth mourns and languishes. The world droops and languishes. The proud people of the earth droop. And the earth is profaned under those living in it, because they transgress Torah, they violate a statute, and they break the everlasting covenant." Wow. Let me read that again. "And the earth is profaned under those living in it." Why? "Because they transgress the Torah, they violate a statute, and they break the everlasting covenant." And this is why the wrath of Yahweh is coming on the world. Verse 6, "On account of this, a curse has devoured the earth, and they who live in it are held guilty. For this, those living in the earth are consumed, and few men are left." And I said this, in the time we're living in now, by the time Yeshua returns and the kingdom starts, 95 to 98% of the people living in the world right now will not be here. The day of Yahweh is going to destroy most human beings on the planet, and the tens of million people that will be left, which is only a couple of percent of the people alive today, those are the ones that Yahweh is going to be able to work with and to restore during the millennium and start to restore all of these things, but in particular, the marriage covenant. The marriage covenant will be restored, and like it was at creation, like Yeshua said, and there is no putting away, there is no divorce, but it is a marriage between one man and one woman, right? It's he made them male and female, so marriage is between a man and a woman, one man and one woman, and it's until death do them part. Last scripture here. Last scripture is Psalm 15. Psalm 15. Because if we want to be in that kingdom, we really need to take this serious. And like I said, this is one of the things that Yahweh showed me at Mount Sinai in the recent trip. And I'll be talking about that when we take our trip to Babylon in different places. I'm putting a PowerPoint together on the Mount Sinai trip and the things that happened there. But a lot of things going on there. And wow, many, many new finds from Mount Sinai. That's also really, really exciting. Yahweh's doing a lot in these end times. Psalm 15 says a psalm of David, right? So another, what a blessing we have to have David's words, his prayers to Yahweh, his songs to Yahweh, right? Look what it says. "O Yahweh, who shall sojourn in your tabernacle? Who shall settle on your holy mountain? He who walks uprightly and works righteousness and speaks the truth in his heart," right? Not truth breakers, but truth seekers and truth keepers. "Who shall sojourn in your tabernacle? Who will settle on your holy mountain? He who walks uprightly and works righteously and speaks the truth in his heart. He does not backbite with his tongue, nor does evil to his friend, nor lifts up a reproach against his neighbor," right? He's not a gossiper. He's not saying false things. But look what it says in verse 4. "In his eyes, the reprobate has been despised," right? So the reprobate, the one who turns back, the one who quits, is despised. "But he honors those who fear Yahweh. He has sworn to his hurt, and he will not change it." He has sworn to his hurt, and he will not change it. So we don't just keep our word when it's convenient. We don't just keep our word when we want to, when it works for us. We keep any word that comes out of our mouth if we want to be ambassadors for Yahweh and children in his kingdom. And look at our note, what it says. It says, "The true person of Yahweh is like one that has character and keeps his word at all costs and is not double-minded, but loyal to Yahweh in all things." So this is the person that Yahweh says will be in his kingdom. "In his eyes, the reprobate has been despised, but he honors those who fear Yahweh. He has sworn to his hurt, and he will not change it." Even if it costs him a lot, he's going to keep his word to his own hurt. So You know, many times in a bad marriage, a spouse only wants to blame the other spouse, but we must realize that we made covenant with the spouse, and is between the spouse, both spouses, the husband and wife, and Yahweh. So even if the partner is unfaithful, we need to continue to be faithful as Yahweh is with us. And I hear this all the time, you know, well, they committed adultery on me first. So that's like saying, if somebody kills somebody else, does that give you the right to kill somebody too? You know, like, that's crazy. Like, well, he was stealing. It's like when you see the looting, people going into the stores. Well, somebody else stole the TV, I only stole this. No, of course not. The fact that somebody else is sinning doesn't give you the right to sin. The same way here. If a partner is committing adultery, then they're going to lose out on the kingdom for that. But that doesn't give you the right to go out and commit adultery just because they did it. So even if our partner is unfaithful, we need to continue to be faithful as Yahweh is with us. Because what is it? Life is a test. And that test is to see if we will be faithful with Yeshua forever. None of us are faithful, truly faithful, and yet Yeshua still does not put us away, but continues to work with us until the day he returns. Life is only a test to see if we will be faithful to be the bride of Messiah. Even in worldly marriage ceremonies that most take and say, till death do us part. To leave your spouse and marry another is adultery according to Scripture, and no adulterer will inherit the kingdom of Yahweh. Beside our baptism vows, there is no greater covenant relationship in life than the marriage covenant. And like I said a few minutes ago, the world could not survive if the marriage covenant was not worldwide. It couldn't survive even one generation. By our words we'll be justified, and by our words we will be condemned. So Yahweh brought us to Mount Sinai to restore the marriage covenant that Israel broke. This is the time of restoration of all things. Yahweh bless. Chag Sameach.